Well, thank you for the introduction and the opportunity to talk with you today. I hope that my talk will complement Liam's and that at the end perhaps we can have a discussion about what is happening or not happening in the UK, because it's at a fascinating time in its history, I think, as you'll have gathered already. My discussion, conversation, is going to focus around the realities of trying to make some of these initiatives work. The bit in my biography that you didn't hear was that I used to be a director of public health in various parts of England, and then a regional director of public health, because we do have this parallel universe. The way public health is organised at the moment, there is, as you've heard from Liam, there's local authorities that do make major contributions to health improvement and health protection and the whole public health agenda. But actually the focus on leadership of public health in local communities since 1985, at least, has been the director of public health employed by the health service but responsible for improving the health of their population and working very closely with local authorities to do that. And latterly, many of them have had joint appointments with local authorities, so they've been part of the local authority team as well as part of the health service team. And we think that's a pretty good model, actually, and it's worked rather well, and it seems a little bit mad to be totally throwing it up. But the Director of Public Health will remain an important linchpin, a sort of keystone in the new system, because they'll be moving to the local authority with their team. So the challenge for all of us is to get them to be able to still influence the health service and work to get healthcare organisations continuing to work to improve health in the widest sense. So that's a bit of a link with Liam's, but I'm going to draw on my experience of trying to develop some community abilities on the social determinants front in a couple of areas to just illustrate what I think are real difficulties for people trying to make things happen. We've heard already that loose coalitions are very difficult to work with. I think the people who are at the heart of those and whose job it is to try and make those things work, the community workers, the leaders, the enthusiasts, the advocates for it all, it's quite hard not to get exhausted, and it's quite hard not to decide after a little while that it is all too difficult and there must be easier things to be doing. And I guess we all know, certainly presidents of faculties of public health know very well, that you hear a lot about what you're doing wrong and you don't really hear a lot about what you're doing right. So it's quite easy to get a little bit discouraged along the way, particularly when you're trying to deliver goals which by their very nature take a long time to achieve and really require sustained commitment over a considerable period of time. So I'll talk about one or two examples, and then I will just talk about one or two ideas that I have of about how public health associations can really help those in the field keep on going when it's really quite tough to keep on going. So, what are my examples? First, I have to say I don't have anything to declare. And first one I want to talk about is this one, Investment for Health, Public Health Strategy for the East Midlands. East Midlands region of England is one of nine UK regions, and it's got a population of about 4 million. This is a historical talk. We're not really supposed to talk about regions anymore, are we, Liam?
Are
the new government abolished them, but people had only just really got used to using them, so as far as I'm concerned they still exist, and they still exist in a lot of people's minds.
Subnational
areas there now. They're likely to be reinvented, I think, in a couple of years. So this is the East Midlands region, population of 4 million, in the middle of the country, very mixed sort of area, lots of goes from the seaside to big industrial towns, large rural areas that mostly grow cabbages and other vegetables, with a lot of immigrant populations that come in just for the summer to do the picking and so on. But also big industrial towns, Nottingham, Leicester, conurbations around there. Very varied population. And a lot of health inequalities in it, a lot of health challenges, all the ones, the normal ones that you'd expect, particular focus on accidents because lots of rural roads and road deaths and so on, and a lot of concern about education and the potential for getting health improved through education. Now, in about 2002, what we decided to do was to develop a strategy for the region. But rather than just sitting where I was at the time as a regional regional government office, it was the government sort of outpost in the region, and it had a regional director of public health in it, which was me. Rather than us just writing something, which we could have done, and sending it out to people and saying this would be a fine thing, we decided to use a new, newly established organisation, the Regional Assembly. So it's a little bit the other way from what Liam was describing, where you build a coalition to do something. This was thinking, well, this is what we've got to do. We will build on the back of a coalition that has already been established. Every region has to have one. The East Midlands has got one. It's looking for a job, really. And this could be one of its jobs, was to improve the health of the region. So we positioned this, the effort for health in that way, and having launched the vision, encouraged the Assembly to buy into it, we then acted entirely through the Assembly to get its members, which were representatives of all the local councils, all the local authorities in the region, plus the health authorities in the region. So they came together in this Assembly. We used them to own the strategy and develop it, publish it. It had about 12 overarching objectives with four priorities, but the priorities were around education. They were around embedding ideas of health in all the strategic work that were done by other organisations in the region too, so whether it's economic development or what. So we had a strategy. It was owned by the councils, the health authorities themselves, and the business community, who also signed up and were part of the Assembly through its representative organisations. We were all very proud of ourselves and launched it. 3 years on, it was stuttering, really. It had the word investment for health was in a lot of publications, and I think people had got a lot of awareness, more awareness of the fact that what they were doing in their normal day-to-day lives could improve health. But was it making any change to real health statistics? No, I can't say that we saw lots of changes to health statistics. But it did become part of the vocabulary, and the fact that investment for health and thinking about health became part of normal thinking for a lot of businesses and a lot of local authorities, a lot of organisations, I think did have an impact. 5 years on, it was reviewed and next steps for investment for health was developed, and we now have a new strategy for the region building on those same priorities but taking it forward into the whole new context and with quite a degree of traction there in individuals, say going out into individual organisations. But very hard to actually say what did it do or what didn't, but nice to see people, it pops up, you see investment for health just being used as a natural sort of phrase in the media or in schools or in discussions with particularly local businesses, and it's spawned an awful lot of networks around the individual objectives themselves. So there became one, for example, in fact a cross-cutting one about arts for health, which managed to engage a lot of the business community and the arts community as well as health and local authorities. So that was a big effort trying to use existing levers to make change, which had some impact, but as I said, very difficult to demonstrate exactly what it's done. I'm going to skip the next slide and go on to this, which is a different approach. This was from my pandemic influenza time, and I thought the national pandemic influenza preparedness work that I did it was a very complicated program at the time that I was leading it. It was actually recognised as one of the biggest and most complicated government procurement programs that there was, because of the extent of stakeholder involvement involved, and also the fact that we were spending £1.2 million of government money over the lifetime of the programme. So it's a very big programme. And it had three bits of it, one of which was protecting people from getting the disease in the first place. Second level of defence was, and can we give them vaccines if they get the bugs into the body? Third level of defence, how are we going to make sure that they've got drugs and healthcare available to them if there really is a major pandemic? So three levels of defence, quite complicated. I'm just focusing, though, on that outer level of how do we get communities involved in this government initiative to stop bugs getting into people. Focusing on influenza, but trying to build it into the everyday of it's not just a pandemic you need to be prepared for, these things will be useful to you, whatever disease happens to be coming along, and every winter, particularly for colds and flu. So we had quite a complicated programme just around this bit, which involved using the media, as you've seen in this it's a video. I've only got one slide from it, which is quite sufficient to give you the overall idea. But we also had our sort of catchphrase of catch it, bin it and kill it, catch the bugs, throw your tissue in the bin and wipe surfaces, wash your hands regularly. And this, you see the NHS logo down at the bottom there, it engaged the health service, but it engaged local hospitals and local primary care centres in doing what they could individually to use this same message to go out and encourage change. We also involved the private sector. This is the local, this is the subways in Camden, actually, who got quite excited about it. Transport for London did a huge amount of work in giving us free access and in working with their staff. And particularly, we got a large number of large organisations to work as opinion leaders to show others how it could be done to protect their staff, and using, again, actually trading quite unashamedly on the investment for health bit. This is an economic good for you as well as a health good for you as businesses. And then finally, how do we really get out into the local communities? Well, through schools, of course. I haven't got a picture of the schools, but we did each local district and local authority, led by its DPH, was encouraged to run programmes with the local schools. But this is something different altogether. This is the Women's Institute of England. They are ladies of a certain age usually. There's no lower age limit, but younger women don't usually join. They meet once a week usually, and they do very sterling good work. They became famous a few years ago for giving a slow hand clap to Tony Blair when he went to try and tell them what a great guy he was. They didn't. And so they're really, that they can, when they need to, be very influential. Anyway, the Women's Institute, more renowned for craft work and flower arranging, if I'm honest, than campaigns like this, but really keen to help. And so we ran this day with a media celebrity, and there were people from, representatives from every region of the Women's Institute, came to learn all about catching it, binning it and killing it, and were sent off as a force to be reckoned with in their local communities to disseminate the word. That was brilliant. We got reports back from them over time, and I think they probably had more impact than most on their children, grandchildren, and anybody else who happened to be in the way, quite honestly. But that, as although this is a slightly unusual model, perhaps, for using as an example of community engagement, and I can describe it like that and give you a really positive thing and say, look, WI did it, look, the schools did it, look, the hospitals did it. Actually, across the country, again, it was extremely patchy. And where you had really strong leadership from the local authority, and I'd say particularly in these cases from the Director of Public Health, who really took this up and motored with it, then you got a lot of change and sustained change in your community. Where they couldn't be bothered, they didn't really know what to do, they got other things on their minds, you hadn't got somebody who was really up to the job in the role, then not a lot happened. They'd tick the box, they'd say, I've done it, and nothing would really happen. So I think that certainly it's just a very good example of the importance of the local person and the enthusiast, but of also keeping them going, because we were doing that, if you recall, at a time when there actually wasn't a pandemic. is one thing when it came along, but this was all in the few years before it. And my final example is this one, which is a playground in the street where I live, in a village called Oxton, up in the Midlands of England. And our local playground was falling apart and becoming really quite tatty. And nobody was really doing much about it. I guess those of us who'd been enthusiasts when our children were young, our children were now grown up and we hadn't quite got grandchildren in the area yet, so you kind of forget about these things, but it was becoming shabby. And suddenly, over a period of about 3 or 4 months, the community were galvanised by a local councillor who wanted to do a village plan. She just was elected to the council, wanted to do something, got the village doing its own plan, asked everybody what they thought was important, and lo and behold, a lot of people said playground was important. And they have, over that period of time, managed to lever in money, partly from the local council, partly, I'd like to think, because the local council is very aware of health issues as a result of going back to the strategy and all these other things over years, but also partly from local philanthropists, from individual people in the community. And this has emerged really out of the community itself, without any director of public health or anybody having to tell them what to do. It has come out of enthusiasts. But even that local councillor would say, when I've spoken to her about it over time, well, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad I did it. But it'll be a little while before I start doing anything like that again. So just to finish, what do I think? What kind of help do people need? What do communities need from public health associations? A range of things, but really focused on keeping those people who are keen and interested and leading and ready to lead able to do it. So helping them attain high standards of practice to be good at their job in the first place and to keep those standards up, but also give them access to advice, information, continuing development, but networks of people who think the same as them, have got the same problems as them, and who they can learn from. And those networks that were established in the East Midlands were sort of good examples of that. They shared thinking, and they also, both by meeting face-to-face but also through e-groups, enables people to encourage each other over time and to really make those links. But I think also at the sort of national level, there's a lot that public health associations can do to make the context and the environment something within which the health of the public can flourish and within which public health practitioners can really do their work really well. And these are the sorts of things that I'm thinking of there. I'm spending, as Liam is, a lot of time in our Houses of Parliament at the moment, or with parliamentarians, just trying to wave the flag for what makes sense for the UK. But there's also joining with other organisations to do the public information and the campaigns and so on over time. So a lot of potential for us, but a lot of work to do.
Yep, I agree.
Thank you.
Thank you.